Thank you for joining us for this episode of Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories. I am your host, Allison Preisinger-Higgins. Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories is a podcast exploring society, culture, and current events through conversation. We aspire to create an open, respectful, and equitable space where guests may feel free to share their truth and lived experiences. Our core values are rooted in community, connection, and personal development. Stories help us learn, relate, and grow. We are here to listen, to take notice. Thank you for being with us. I would like to show gratitude to the traditional ancestral land of the Puyallup people, past and present, on which this episode was created. I encourage listeners to research the land on which you live and are listening right now. Recognizing this is just the beginning. The more you explore, challenge, and learn, the more questions may arise, but this is how we grow and connect. On this episode of Take Notice, we welcome Diana Leary of One Fire Light. You may remember from a few episodes ago a conversation about One Fire Light when I spoke with Catherine Leary, and I was glad to get the opportunity to speak with Catherine's daughter and co-founder, Diana. Diana is driven in her endless search for world-class instructors to bring unique and one-of-a-kind offerings in yoga, strength and cardio workouts, dance, sound healing, and meditation practices designed to calm the mind, strengthen the body, and uplift the spirit. She draws on her Broadway experiences in theater arts, having worked on such productions as The Book of Mormon to present exceptional fitness and wellness performances. The icing on the cake is working together with her mother, Catherine, on producing One Fire Light, truly a labor of love. It was a wonderful experience speaking with Diana. You'll get to hear about her trajectory from wanting to pursue a career in criminal justice, to nannying, to now being a co-founder of a wonderful community of wellness and fitness called One Fire Light. So please enjoy this episode with Diana Leary. All right, Diana, thank you for joining me on Take Notice. You're all the way over in Philadelphia, right? I'm in the Seattle area, so we're a few hours apart. Thanks for joining me this evening. How are you?
Of course, Allison. I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. It's a good Monday. It's been rainy over here, getting definitely the fall season, the pretty trees and everything. Do you have nice, colorful trees over in Philadelphia as well?
Yes, beautiful foliage, and I love fall. Anything pumpkin and fall.
Nice. Yeah, it's something else. It's kind of like an excuse to just kind of tuck yourself away and get cozy, which is nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Have you lived in Philadelphia all your life, or where did you grow up?
No, just for a year. I just moved from the city, from New York, and I grew up in Jersey.
I don't know. I'm not as familiar with the Jersey area. I lived in Boston for a little bit, but can you describe the area that you grew up in?
Yeah, so I grew up in Hoboken, which is literally like the sixth borough of New York. So you can get to New York in like 7 minutes from Hoboken. So first West New York, and then moved to Hoboken post high school, and then stayed there for like 8 years. Yeah, so essentially we sit on the Hudson River, those two towns facing Manhattan. So you have the full beautiful skyline of New York without actually having to live in New York.
Oh, lovely. That's really nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I went to college in Boston. So I love Boston.
Oh, you did? Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why I was there too. What college did you go to?
Oh, nice. Northeastern.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to picture where that is.
Downtown by Copley Square.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Nice. I was on like Mass Ave, and I went to Berklee College of Music. So Mass Ave and Boylston. And so that's not far. Yeah. Yeah, that was an experience.
Very close.
For sure.
I think that's where John Mayer, the musician, went, Berklee, yeah?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, some of my, the year I started, he visited, and some of our songwriting students got to like do like a whole master class with him or something like that, like for the week or something. It was like this whole big thing. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What years were you in Boston?
I was there from like September 2008 through the end of 2010. So about 2.5 years. I transferred a bunch of credits and stuff. But yeah, what about you?
I graduated in 06, and then I stayed in Boston till 08.
Oh, okay.
When the economy crashed, then I moved back to Jersey.
Yep, I was there right at that. Yeah, you left and I came in. Yeah, sounds like that's cool. So you went to Northeastern. What did you focus on at Northeastern?
Criminal justice.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
So what kind of courses do you take in criminal justice?
Oh, wow. Everything. Political science, psychology, criminology, which was like my favorite, you know, getting in the mind of criminals. Yeah. All sorts of, I took language. I took Japanese.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What got you interested in going down that path?
Ever since I was little, I was just really interested in like crime shows. And I can remember as a child, like watching Miami Vice, which I shouldn't probably have not been watching at like the age of 7 with my mom. So I've just always like been super interested in like documentaries and crime and solving crimes. So yeah, that's what led me to criminal justice.
Interesting. Yeah. When you were growing up, so I talked with your mom, Catherine, a while back, and we've had her on the show. So if I remember correctly, are you an only child? Is that right?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
That's right. Okay. So growing up, you had your mom around. And then what other family did you have around you as you were growing up?
My grandparents literally lived 3 blocks away, going like down my street. And then my uncle lived 4 blocks up my street. So I had a lot of family really close by.
When I was talking with your mom, she did so many things. And so when you were growing up, that time frame, what was she focused on in for work?
Yeah,
or?
At that time frame, work-wise, she was doing international trade. So bringing American companies and getting them into foreign markets. So she worked with Estee Lauder, got them into the markets in South Africa. And then when we moved to Japan, at that time, her client was Ben and Jerry's ice cream. So breaking them into, you know, the foreign markets in Japan.
Wow. Yeah. I remember her mentioning that you all lived in Japan for a while. How old were you when you lived there?
Oh gosh, I was like 10 or 11 when we moved there.
Oh really? Remind me, how long were you there?
A year.
Okay.
A year our first stint, and then we went back, you know, we would go back every few months for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's nice. And you'd be able to see family and whatnot. What was that transition like at the time? Was it pretty impactful, or was it just kind of like, this is what is kind of thing, and it's just for a year, so I'll be back?
No, it was very, it was very impactful. I loved it. It was being completely immersed in a different culture. We didn't live on an army base, so we weren't around, you know, other Americans or other foreigners. So it was kind of like sink or swim in terms of like learning how to get around where we were living, getting on the bus, getting on, you know, the train, and making sure I'm going in the right direction. So it was very interesting. And then at that age, you're a sponge. So language is, I don't want to say almost effortless, but it became effortless because nobody around me was speaking English. You know, and then I was working with a tutor as well. So when I, after the end of that year, I was like very much like a little beyond conversational. So I really enjoyed it. I mean, to this day that I'm still, you know, actively studying Japanese, and you know, I want to become fluent one day. So it was very impactful.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you took Japanese in college, you said. Did you get to like test out of some of the levels of it or something? Or
yeah,
by that point?
Yeah. I took it for I think 2 years. So it's harder when you're old. I mean, out of all of the Asian languages, because one of my good friends is fluent in Mandarin, and that is a whole other level of, I don't think I would ever be able to become fluent in Mandarin, but I would say out of all of the Asian languages, Japanese, I found the easiest to learn. But it's hard when you're not around native speakers, then you start to lose, you start to lose it eventually.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Cause you're not, if you don't use it, you kind of lose it. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you ended up going to Northeastern for criminal justice. And did you finish out that degree, or what was that trajectory like? Did you decide to go into that work after college, or did you shift gears?
Yeah. So I transferred to Northeastern from Spelman in Atlanta. I transferred to Northeastern in 2003 and then got my BS in criminal justice. And then post-college was desperately trying to break into the field as were the other, you know, thousands and thousands of like college graduates in Boston. And it's just, it's very tough. Like, you know, had I known what I know now, like kind of they'd say, oh, you know, major in criminal justice and the FBI will like, you know, want you as soon as you graduate. But the reality was at that time when I was almost done with Northeastern, they were looking for computer science majors. And, so it was like criminal justice. It was thousands of us with CJ degrees. So it wasn't a specialty that at that time the FBI or, CIA were recruiting for. So I remember that you recruited like one person on campus because they were on campus for like several weeks. And so we caught wind that like what was going on, but it was literally one person from, our graduating class.
It was that kind of your goal going into that degree as far as what you'd like to do out when you got out, or what kind of roles were you looking at when you were studying?
Yeah, so my goal was to be in federal law enforcement of some kind. So like FBI, CIA, DEA, but more FBI, CIA were like my top two choices. Mm-hmm. Like one of my law professors, we have to also take intro to law and then like a, law 202 or whatever. One of my law professors really wanted me to go to law school, but I wasn't feeling it. And people say, if you're not like 1,000% sure, like don't go to law school because it is no joke.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something like becoming a lawyer or a doctor or any of those things. I imagine, you got to really want it to make it work. So that makes sense. I mean, that's a lot of schooling too.
Oh, it's a lot of schooling. And then with law school, there's only one exam each year. So if you don't do well in that exam, you've wasted a year.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't think I knew that. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Once I heard that, I was, no.
No pressure. Jeepers. Yeah.
Yeah, no pressure at all, right?
Right. Oh my
and it's
gosh.
Funny because my law professor, like I wasn't even doing well in her class, but I did well with like the oral argument. So she was like, oh, you would be an amazing lawyer. And I would tell her all the time, like, Ms. Baldwin, I'm like failing your class. Like, why do you think I should?
So you started out after high school going to Spelman and then you transferred. What made you decide to do that transfer? Was it the criminal justice education that was at Northeastern or?
Yeah, I guess going from the North. So going from New Jersey to the South, Atlanta was just pretty much a shell shock. And because my birthday's in September, I've always graduated early. So I graduated high school at 16, turning 17. I graduated in June. I was turning 17 in September. Okay. And like 2 days after my high school graduation, I had to move down to Spelman for a month of orientation. So that was a lot. Yeah. And it was just a different experience. Like I had fun while I was there. I met some lifelong friends, but they didn't have my major. So I was majoring in sociology, not criminal justice, and I didn't find it academically challenging. And I wanted to find an environment that was more diverse, more academically challenging. And then also, I liked the fact that it was closer to home. So it was easier for my mom and my grandmother and, my uncle to come visit me.
Yeah, that's nice to kind of have that family support right there instead of hours and hours away, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Can you describe some of the... I mean, I can imagine, but in your experience, what were some of the big differences between growing up in New Jersey and then making that transition to the South, to Spelman?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, so many, but like, Spelman was comprised of like elite and very affluent, women of color. Mm-hmm. And while I had access to some amazing things growing up, like traveling around the world, I wasn't in organizations like Jack and Jill, which, everyone who is at Spelman, like 99% of everyone at Spelman is in Jack and Jill and has been in Jack and Jill since they were like a little child. So,
oh, I don't think I've heard of that. What is Jack and Jill?
It's an organization for affluent people of color, and they have balls and different events, and you pay your dues, and so it's almost like it's sorority like. That's the easiest way to describe it.
Sure.
So I didn't grow up in that world. I grew up like very like kind of relaxed environment, traveling around the world, doing interesting things. Mm-hmm. And then I'm immersed into like put into a space where, everyone's kind of done that same thing and been on that same trajectory growing up. So it was, a shell shock for me. I mean, I did make some amazing friends, but it wasn't my vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So was it after that freshman year that you transferred or?
Yeah. At the end of my sophomore year, I transferred.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Like, my credits didn't transfer. So I had to essentially do another 3 years at Northeastern.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. That's always the worst when that kind of thing
happens. Always like trying to get credits to transfer.
Yeah. You're like, oh, man. So after Northeastern, you're describing that it's a bit of a struggle to break into criminal justice and get jobs and things. So what did you end up doing after you graduated college?
Oh, wow. So many things. Nothing to do with criminal justice. Immediately post-college, I stayed in Boston. I got a position with American Express. They have, concierge for their Centurion and Platinum cardholders. So working with, celebrities, et cetera, as the concierge. So it was a really fun job. Everyone at the company was like newly graduate. So it was a very cool environment to be in. But also, I mean, it did have a security element. It was, we had like security bays, we had the fingerprint in. So there was this like, level of kind of criminal justice because we had access to thousands and thousands of Platinum and Centurion card numbers, American Express card numbers. As you know, with the Centurion card, it's unlimited. You can literally buy an island. So there was a lot of high security at the job, but it was like really fun position because you never know what people are going to call in, what their requests are going to be, and then you have to make miracles happen. So it was really fun and interesting.
That does sound interesting. Wow.
Yeah. So if you have an American Express card and you've ever called concierge, you might have gotten me.
There you go. That's awesome. Yeah, I can see how that's connected because they're not just going to let anybody have that job for sure. Like, you've got to have some knowledge of like security and like be trustworthy and honest and all those things. Yeah.
Wow. Exactly. And then worldly, because a card member can call in and say, hey, I'm landing in Paris in an hour. Can you give me the top 10 restaurants you would recommend? And those were the type of calls we would get. So, through working at American Express, I learned the top 10 restaurants in New York. So if someone says, hey, I need a great Italian restaurant, I'm like, let me call Babbo and see what I can do, even though they have like a 30-day booking policy. Mm. So it was like a lot of networking. It was a lot of, finagling. And so it was really fun and a learning experience too, because you had to learn like the top 10 nightclubs or restaurants or, things to do like event-wise in like, major cities around the country.
Right. Yeah, that sounds amazing. Yeah, it's such a great experience. And then make little notes to yourself for where you want to go later, I imagine.
Exactly. Especially because I know people there. Like, I could just call them like, hey, it's Diana from American Express.
There you go. That's awesome. So I think your mom and I briefly discussed that you ended up getting work in Broadway with costumes or design in some way? Is that right?
Yes. Working in wardrobe as a dresser for Book of Mormon.
Oh, for Book of Mormon. Right. When in your timeline was that? Was that kind of after your American Express job, or when did that come up?
Yeah, so after American Express, I moved back home to New Jersey in 2008, and then I started working with an on-call nanny agency in New Jersey. So would get a phone call at like 7 a.m., would go to a family's house, work with them for the day. So it was really fun. It was interesting. I got to meet a lot of families, a lot of babies, a lot of children.
Okay.
And then shortly after that, I moved to New York. And then I became, I really enjoy working with newborns and babies and children. So from that experience, I went and got all my certifications, like infant newborn CPR, et cetera, et cetera. And then I became a full-time nanny in New York City. And worked with many different families in New York. And I was working with a family who had two little boys, and I would drop their youngest son off to preschool. And he had a little best friend at the preschool. So I would always do like little play dates before afternoon school with the mom of his best friend. And she would come over our house and, I would make snacks and we would do play dates. And then when I left that position, I quit that position that I had, the mom found out and reached out to me, and she was like, hey, can you, come meet me here? And I'm thinking we're meeting for coffee. So I was like, sure, no problem. And then I show up and it's the stage door of Book of Mormon. And I'm like, what is going on? And turns out she is the wardrobe mistress for Book of Mormon. And one of her best dressers was on maternity, had just went on maternity leave. So she was down a dresser. Oh. And she was like, hey, like, you know, you're great with people. Like, do you want to be a dresser? I was like,
wow.
I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So it literally like, it was like a Thursday night. She hired me and I started the Saturday matinee show, which was insane.
Oh, wow.
Because any given dressing role, you know, they call them tracks. Any given dressing track on a Broadway show has over 200 pages of notes. And that's, you know, you have to memorize that. You have to know where to be at a certain time because, as you know, it's a live show and there's like no margin for error.
Right. Oh my goodness. Wow. So are you assigned, so there's multiple dressers and then are you assigned a particular actor or how does that work?
Yeah. So there's multiple dressers. On Book of Mormon, there was about like seven of us. Yeah. I think it was seven of us.
Wow.
And you're not assigned by actor, you're assigned by track. So we're all moving, you know, figure eights through the show, if that makes sense, like backstage. And so like on my track, I think I dressed 20 people a night.
Okay.
Yeah. And it could be from quick changes, meaning like, for example, when the curtain goes up on my track, I was laying on the floor, curtain goes up, they do their first scene, they run off to, you know, stage right where I was literally on the floor. I had to like rip their costumes off, get them into their next outfit, which was a suit and tie and tap shoes. And then I'm on to the next, you know, then I'm doing the next thing, like leaving a prop on the third step on the left stairwell. And, you know, you're running, you're running off stage all the whole show. I mean, it's pretty insane. So quick changes are the changes that are 15 seconds or less that are done on stage, you know, stage left or stage right. And then we had other changes where there was 5 to 10 minutes where I would actually go to the dressing room of say three or four actors and help get them into their more intricate costumes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So you had many, many different actors. I had Mormon boys, I had Ugandans, like throughout the night, I'm dressing many people.
Wow. That makes sense. It's kind of in a way like a relay race. Like you can't be all in the same spot at the same time. So you have to kind of like take turns, like you're saying, doing figure eights or something. Yeah.
Exactly.
I can kind of picture that now. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like one of my mentors who was, you know, had been a dresser a long time on the show, like there was long stints of time during the show where he only dressed the Mormon guys.
Okay.
And that was just the track that he was on. But then, like, my last quick change of the night is me putting the ties on two Mormon boys. So if that, like, makes sense in the grand scheme. He didn't only dress Mormon guys, but predominantly for his track, it was mostly Mormon guys.
Wow. Oh, that sounds like what an insane shift in. He like, had you not quit that nanny job, you know, you wouldn't have been available to do this really cool new experience. That's so cool.
Yeah, definitely. It was fun. It was crazy because this was pre-Hamilton. I don't know if you're like a Broadway geek, but I am. this was pre-Hamilton. So at that time, Book of Mormon was the hottest show on Broadway. So just like leaving to try to go get a muffin from the corner bakery was like people were asking for our autograph. Like it was insane. And I would say,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
And then I was with one of the Mormon guys once and I was like, I'm just a dresser. He's like, it's easier if you just sign their playbill and keep it.
Don't protest. Just do it.
Yeah, literally. Just sign it. So I just started like signing random playbills.
There you go. Someone is very happy about that. You know, probably many people are very happy about that.
Right?
That's amazing. Yeah.
My signature lives somewhere.
Yes, exactly. Someone's wall or someone's scrapbook for sure. That's amazing. How long were you with that show?
Oh, wow. I did Book of Mormon for 2 years, a year full time while the dresser, Melanie, was on maternity leave, and then a year on call. So it was very interesting because I actually, you know, you never think you're going to get that call. And then I got that emergency call and it was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Back to it. Did you want to continue pursuing that for other shows or?
I definitely would have been open to it. At that time, the Radio City had tried to launch a spring show. So, you know, how they have their holiday show.
Mm-hmm.
They then tried to launch this spring show that just didn't do well. So a lot of dressers in the industry committed to that show and signed a contract with that show, and it launched and failed like literally within a month. So they were all out of work. So it was just very tough in terms of dressing jobs. Like, there was a woman at Book of Mormon who had been there for 30 years. So it's very, those jobs are few and far between when there's availability for a dresser.
That makes sense. Yeah. There's probably only so many opportunities for probably many, many people. Yeah. That sounds
exactly. And it's union and it's good money and it's really fun. So, get into.
I imagine. Yeah, that makes complete sense for sure. What did you end up transitioning to after that show?
Yeah, so after that show, I went back to being a full-time nanny.
Okay.
And then I actually landed a nanny position with a Broadway family, and the mom was starring in Porgy and Bess at the time. Mm-hmm. So still in the Broadway world, they have identical twin boys. So it was really fun, really crazy. I was with them for a year while she was in New York, and then she landed the Broadway tour for a year. So she traveled for a whole year. I moved into their home and raised her sons for, you know, a year while she was on the road in a Broadway show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How old were they?
They had just turned 4 when I moved in.
Wow. So yeah, preschool and all that stuff.
Yeah, all that fun stuff.
And so most recently, you've been working with your mother. I'm not sure, is One Firelight your main full-time gig now, or are you also doing other things while you're getting this off the ground, or so it's kind of already off the ground? Yeah. Yeah, that seems like too much to be doing more than that.
I've been working around the clock.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, because you both are, what would your title be again? Are you one of the CEOs, or what is your official title?
Co-founder and director of content development.
Oh yeah, that's right. Your mom was saying that you help kind of plan out the locations for some of the video shoots and things like that. Is that right?
Yep. I am location scout. I find all the locations and also all of the instructors, and I do all of the wardrobe for the instructors.
Wow. Yeah. So kind of bringing together a lot of different past experiences into one role. That's pretty amazing.
Exactly. And it's, it's been very interesting. I had never done location scouting before. It's really fun, actually. Trying to find the perfect place to shoot is very interesting. Yeah. Like, I would find a place that I absolutely love, and then our DP looks at it from a DP perspective, director of photography, hey, this is it going to work? Based on where the light is, the sun will set by the house or whatever, So it's very interesting.
Yeah. So probably a lot of back and forth and collaboration as far as that goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How long ago did you all get One Firelight started?
Oh, yeah. So we got funded at the end of 2020. So I quit. That's right. Yeah. I was nannying at the time. I was a full-time nanny when the pandemic hit. And at the end of 2020, we got fully funded, and I, quit and just became, full-time with One Firelight.
That's wonderful. It seems like that year brought a lot of change for a lot of people. It seems like a very, not that nannying was necessarily bad, it wasn't a bad thing. So not like a big positive change necessarily, but like a shift in everything that you're doing, I imagine. Like, you're not hanging out with the kiddos anymore. You're doing something entirely different. That year just made everybody kind of shift gears, it seems like, in one way or another.
Definitely.
Yeah. What was that experience like deciding to go into business with your mom?
It was actually really exciting because I knew, it was on the table and she was looking for funding. So, that was in the orbit. So when it happened, when we got the funding, it was really exciting to just hit the ground running with it.
Yeah, I imagine. And I know your mom she and I discussed her background in yoga and meditation and things like that. What's your background with wellness and yoga and all that?
Yeah, so I'm what they would say, a gym rat. So I was going to Equinox literally 2 to 3 hours every night pre-pandemic. And I had my favorite instructors, and I was running around taking their classes. So my favorite classes are heavy weight training, boxing, and I was taking a sword class. called Forza, which is very interesting. It means, you know, strength in Italian. But yeah. So, but that's like, I come from a different approach. My mom is like the yoga side and I'm like, let's get heavy weights and like throw weights around and
yeah.
box.
Yeah. Cause strength training, or, you know, I suppose you're strengthening your muscles in yoga as well, but strength training is great for your, for anybody, it seems like. So doing a bit of that all the time must make a big difference. And then bringing that into that side of things into One Fire Light, I imagine, kind of gives it a well-rounded scope, I imagine. Is that
exactly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell me about the sword class.
My favorite instructor is a woman named Ilaria Montagnani, and she's from Italy. And she developed Power Strike, which is her company, 20 years ago, and has been teaching it at Equinox for the last 20 years. So the sword class Forza is very interesting. You have a 3 to 5 pound weighted Japanese sword called a boken. And throughout the hour long class, you're doing movements. It's building up to a routine. And, you're assigned to a spot because, you know, you can injure somebody with these swords. So you have to stay in your spot. And it's very like Zen and meditative music playing. And you're building up to this routine. So it's a very intense workout because you're lunging with the sword. You know, you're turning around and like doing interesting movements with the sword. So, yeah, not only is it a good workout, but it's very Zen and meditative. So it was like my version of yoga because it was relaxing. You had to be 1,000% focused on what you were doing with the sword or else you can injure yourself. You can injure somebody around you. So yeah, it was really fun.
Sounds like you have to be very, very present, which is meditative and in itself. Yeah. Well, partly because the danger aspect of it, which is kind of cool though.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Is that kind of a class incorporated into One Fire Light, or what all do you all focus on for One Fire Light?
Yeah, we have a nice range. We have Pilates, yoga, boxing, strength training, trampoline classes, which are really crazy and really fun. some dance classes, meditation, sound bowls. So we have a nice variety of classes and some amazing instructors.
Yeah, it seems like it. Mm-hmm. I've heard really good things about trampolining. What is it?
Yes.
Rebounding. Like, I guess some people call it rebounding. Is that right?
Rebounding, yes.
Yeah, like for the lymphatic system or something like that. I don't know. Like, does something to, obviously, I don't know much about it, but I've heard good things.
Well, it's good for, it's good for like low impact. It's good for, you know, if you're pregnant, if you have, you know, recovering from injuries or injuries that get, you know, it's good for circulation.
And makes sense.
Yeah. And it's good on the knees. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I guess I wouldn't have guessed that, but that makes sense because the impact isn't there. It's being absorbed by the
trampoline. Exactly. Right.
Nice. Yeah. Because I always think like, oh, it'd be great to be able to get into a pool because the impact isn't there, but it's hard to get into a pool sometimes, you know? So a trampoline, maybe that's the thing. I don't know.
Yeah. So next time we talk, you're going to be like working out on a trampoline.
Right. Exactly. What is something that you are most excited about or super excited about coming up in the future, either for One Fire Light or for, you know, anything, any part of your life that you're super excited about coming up?
Well, this month is World Vegan Month. So I've been, I'm also like the resident chef at One Fire Light. So whenever we're in production, I cook all the food for the crew and for our instructors.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, so I've been working on a lot of amazing vegan recipes that we're launching on, you know, on our socials this month. So make sure to follow along Instagram, One Fire Light, Facebook, One Fire Light, TikTok, YouTube. Some of my recipes will be posted there.
Oh, wonderful. So you'll be posting vegan recipes. And are you vegan yourself?
I'm vegetarian.
Oh, okay. Nice.
I will never not eat cheese.
That one seems to be the deal breaker for a lot of people.
It is my literal deal breaker.
Yeah.
But there are vegan foods that I love as well. So I don't eat cheese every day. So.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Gotta have a balance, I guess. Yeah, exactly. What got you into being the resident chef for every, like, is it just something you've always done or?
Interesting enough. So like I had mentioned, I was nannying for a family, you know, when the pandemic hit. So I'd started right. with them in October of 2019. Previous to that, I was a live-in for a temporary live-in for a celebrity whose nanny had injured herself. So I was living in New Jersey. And it was just a temporary 3-month gig. She was starring in a TV show as well as a Broadway show at that time. So she just needed someone who can get her through the 3 months until her full-time nanny was, you know, recovered from a back injury and could go back to her role. Mm-hmm. So towards the end of that time, living in New Jersey, I started interviewing, you know, looking for a family in New York City from when I moved back home. And I found a family and I, you know, drove back to to New York from New Jersey for, mm-hmm. you know, one day to interview with the family. And the baby was 2 months old, Charlie, and he's absolutely adorable. And so they hired me. Much later, I found out I was the 23rd person they interviewed for the role.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Like, and it was so crazy because I was like, you know, I had just driven there. I was in a rush. I knew I had to get back to Jersey by a certain time. So I had like my suitcase. Like it was just chaotic. I just like busted in their house like I lived there.
Maybe that helped. Yeah.
Hiring me. So that was cool. So when I moved back home to New York, I literally like the next day I started with them. And it was a very fun and interesting experience. Two investment bankers. So very busy. You know, huge home, you know, 6-story brownstone in Harlem. So, you know, right up the street from where I live. So easy commute. And one day the dad came to me and was like, hey, you know, I'll give you an extra, you know, $500 a week if you'll cook for us. And I was like, okay. And the pandemic had hit by this time. So like there was literally nothing else to do. Like we were locked in the house, nothing to do. And so he's like, I want you to make me and he asked me, he said, oh, can you cook? And I was like, oh yeah, of course I can. That was a lie. And so like, he was like, I want you to make me, it was something like complicated. It wasn't filet mignon, but it was like something I was like, what?
Oh,
and
man.
So of course it was like, you know, sink or swim. So I remember I was like, I looked up a billion recipes. Like I went to Whole Foods, like he'd let me, you know, leave the house with baby, for, you know, to go to Whole Foods because, you know, pandemic, like we just weren't leaving the house.
Yeah.
And I got all these ingredients and I cooked it, you know, I was like studying the cookbooks all day and I was like, oh, you know, this is, I'm going to get fired. Like I just, and so like, I've never like left a house so quickly in my life. I was just like, here's the baby. Like I gotta go. And so I still like, cause I knew I had bombed it. I was just like, oh God, they're gonna like fire me for lying.
Oh, no.
So later on that night, I got like a whole bunch of text messages from the mom and I was like scared to open it. And then I opened it. She's like, oh my God, that's like the best food we've ever had. And da 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 da. And can you start cooking for us like every meal? And, you know, so,
wow.
So yeah, it was really fun. You know, they gave me their Amex. They were like, you know, just buy all organic food. We don't care what you cook. Just, you know, make it amazing. And so I started cooking, you know, 3 meals a day for them, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And, you know, would look up interesting recipes and meal prep and, you know, have to work that around Charlie's naps and everything. But it was, I did that for a whole year and it was just something I really took to and really enjoyed doing.
Wow. Yeah. It sounds like it is. If you could pull that off in the first try, like, it sounds like it's just, you have a knack for it. That's pretty amazing. And that's like, yeah, it seems like you get these opportunities, which is amazing, where you just like launched into something and you figure it out, which is awesome. And then you have the year of working for them to like just hone your chef skills, which is pretty cool.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'll never forget, like the husband is Canadian and his family, his parents were coming in to visit from Canada. And so he's like, hey, I want you to make, you know, their favorite shepherd's pie. But then, you know, his wife's brother is vegetarian. So I had to make two shepherd's pie, like one with meat and like one with So it was insane. In the midst of that, I cut my finger during cooking.
Oh no.
And he like bandaged me up and he's like, can you finish out the meal? You know? And then like the family came and like we all ate and like everyone loved it. So I was like, after that, I was like, okay, like, you know, I know there's something there with that because it was the craziest situation. I just managed to like somehow stay calm within it and just get through it and, you know, make good food.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wonderful. And now I bet you have so many recipes to pull from.
Oh, exactly.
At whatever time. That's amazing. Absolutely. Way back at the beginning of our conversation, you mentioned growing up in, I believe it was Hoboken, right? To where you can see the skyline of New York. Do you have any memories from that time growing up? Like fun things that you, did you go visit New York City a good amount and go do fun things? Like what are some memories from that time?
Absolutely. Yeah. Good memories are like going to Rockefeller Center and ice skating and, you know, going to New York and going to the big toy store, FAO Schwartz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, especially for people with kids. I know you've been to FAO Schwartz.
Right.
So yeah, just doing all like the holiday stuff in the city is always fun.
That makes sense. Yeah, it's probably like everything's probably beautiful as far as the decorations and just that atmosphere of the holidays, something else. Absolutely. In the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Nice. Wonderful. Well, is there anything that I missed asking you about or discussing? We'll have information on One Fire Light in our show notes. So anybody that wants to find you, follow you, connect, all they have to do is open up and click on some things in our show notes. But what else? Is there anything else that I missed?
No, I think you have it all. You have it all. You know, follow us on socials, check out our app, join, become a member of our community. We have some amazing classes and amazing instructors. We're waiting for you to try out their classes.
What's one of your favorite classes on One Fire Light?
Oh, God.
Maybe that's a hard question. I know. Maybe I shouldn't ask that question.
I love Danny's boxing class and PJ's strength training class.
Oh, nice. Okay. Because I imagine during the pandemic, you couldn't do those classes in person anymore and you had to transition. So then having that now on the sphere, your world, probably makes a big difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me, Diana, on Take Notice. I appreciate your time and you sharing your stories with me. And I look forward to following One Fire Light and seeing all the wonderful recipes that are coming up this month. That sounds amazing.
Awesome. Thank you, Allison. It was great speaking with you.
Thank you for joining us for Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to share it with someone you know. Connect with us on social media. We would love to hear from you. We are at Take Notice Podcast. You can also find us at takenoticepodcast.org. Reviews help us reach more listeners, so please rate and review on your favorite podcast app. Take Notice, Amplifying Black Stories is produced, hosted, and edited by Allison Preisinger Higgins. Music by Version Big 5 featuring Darius Higgins. Thank you for being with us, and thank you for taking notice.